From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's the Outdoor Connection with Rick Windham on News Talk 1240 KODY.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Joe Rydell. He is a fisheries biologist with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. Good morning, Joe. How are you doing today?
Hey, good morning, Rick. I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Now, you're located in Alliance this morning. Is that correct?
That's right.
And how's you guys' weather up there?
Oh, it's a beautiful morning. The wind's actually not blowing yet.
Take note of that. You know, that'll change in a nanosecond or two.
That's right.
I've had people come here to hunt or fish with me, and one of the comments they'll make is, you know, they'll say, does the wind ever stop blowing? And I say, yeah, generally that nanosecond or two when it's changing directions, you know, it's calm. So let's talk a little bit this morning about fishing in general. And how long have you been with the fisheries group with the Game and Parks?
Well, you know, my experience, you know, I grew up in eastern South Dakota. Where we're going to be talking a little about walleye today, and I grew up as a walleye fisherman in kind of the heart of the walleye Glacial Lakes area.
Yes, it is.
Did education in that general area and was able to work on some research projects with walleye. But I was fortunate enough to land a job out here in western Nebraska about 9 years ago.
And was that quite a cultural shock for you coming from eastern South Dakota to out there on the frontier?
You know what? It really wasn't. The cultural shock was after grad school. I spent about 3 years down in Middle Georgia managing some of their fisheries, and I was very happy to be able to get back to more of the western Midwest states versus being in the Deep South. So this is more of a pleasant move than it was a cultural shock.
Very good. The people I know that come up out of the South, Georgia and South Carolina primarily, I've had people come in, and the one thing that strikes them the most is the lack of trees.
Right.
And it's the same way for us going this way. My sons now live in Virginia and Maryland, and they're still not used to seeing all the trees.
Right. Yeah, you get kind of tunnel vision down there and all the timber.
That's
right. It's almost like driving in eastern Nebraska through all the cornfields. You just can't see much beyond the shoulder.
That's true. Now, your particular area of focus now, is it mainly walleye?
Actually, we manage a variety of species.
Okay.
Up here in the Northwest, you know, we have trout streams. We have warm water fisheries out in the sandhills that support both warm and cool water species. And we also have our cool water plateau reservoirs, irrigation reservoirs out here that are more your walleye fisheries.
Okay.
We kind of dabble in a little bit of everything between panfish, predator fish, walleye, and trout.
I do like coming up in the Northwest, particularly up around Fort Robb and Soldier Creek and stuff like that, and bringing my fly rod and playing with the trout.
We're just finishing up a good project up there in Fort Robb, and it's going to be ready for that fly rod here within the next couple of years. It's going to be a beautiful place to go.
Well, I'll just have to keep that in mind and give you a buzz and come up there and fly fish with you.
There you go.
We'll focus a little bit on walleye now, but why are walleye so popular with so many anglers?
Well, you know, if you look at our creel surveys across the state, especially in our reservoir creels, walleyes are probably one of the top, if not the top, sought species across the state. The only other one that really tops it out, especially in our area, out west, is people that are searching for anything, which they're not going to pass up a walleye if they get one either. But okay. Kind of the main reasons they're real popular, one is table fare. They're one of the best eating fish out there.
True.
You can't hardly mess up a walleye. You can get a pretty fishy one once in a while, but for the most part, they're probably one of the best ones to eat. Another reason is they're aggressive. They grow big. They fight fairly well, and they're a challenge to catch. So it kind of triggers a bunch of different avenues that people are looking for when they're out fishing.
Very good. Now, with walleye being the topic there, and this is usually the time of year, or actually a little earlier, is when the Game and Parks goes and does its walleye egg collection for stocking and maintaining our walleye population. Did that get to happen this year?
Well, I'm going to start off kind of explain a little bit what typically happens on a normal year.
Okay.
You know, we need walleye eggs in different areas of the state, and also we usually collect walleye eggs that we share with other states. We trade species across the state. We can't produce certain species in Nebraska, but we can trade with other states to stock them in our lakes. So we'll give other states walleye eggs, and so they can produce walleye, and we'll get species like blue catfish or wipers or even trout species. So on a normal year, we usually go to several different lakes in order to hit the timing just right, in order to get early eggs out of Sherman Reservoir that we can use in our fry stockings, which are just freshly hatched walleye. Then we'll go to Merritt Reservoir, and we usually get the majority of our walleye eggs out of Merritt. And those are ones that get traded back and forth, and a lot of those get used in our production needs. And then we'll usually finish up at McConaughey if we need to. We're doing really good at Merritt. It's nice to stay there and get it all done.
Okay.
But if we need to, McConaughey's a deeper, colder reservoir. The spawn extends longer. We know we can always get back in there and get the last little bit that we need.
Okay.
Most years, we go out on the dam at night, and we set gill nets to catch them. These are short-term sets. Set them for about two to four hours. Go out, run them, pull the females out of there, throw the males back. We'll take a shocking boat out, and we'll collect the males we need. We're trying to target smaller males and bigger females, so our net size kind of dictates what size fish we're catching. We don't want to handle these big 8-pound males for a couple of reasons. One, they beat you up when you spawn them, and they're older, quite a bit older fish, so the reproductive success on using bigger males might not be so good as we'll be using, you know, those mid-size 18 to 20-inch fish versus 28-inch fish. But this year, with this coronavirus going around, there's a lot of different policies going on trying to protect our employees and trying to find a game plan where we can get together to collect those eggs. It was a real challenge. They were talking about shutting down all of our collections this year, and they canceled Sherman, and they canceled Merritt, and there's just not a good way to get enough employees together in one area without having breaking those quarantine processes. However, most states around us end up canceling their collections altogether. They didn't get any walleye getting stocked in, as I believe, Minnesota, South Dakota, Colorado. They all canceled their collections. But we were approved for two individuals to go out to Lake McConaughey, and they could shock the dam during the day, just the two individuals, and see what they catch. If they caught female walleye, those two individuals could spawn the walleye for our production for the year.
Man, that is a lot of work for two people.
It's a lot of work for two people. Usually our crews are running, just our collection crews are usually running 3 to 4 people.
Right.
On collection, and then we usually have about 5 to 6 people in the spawning process.
Wow.
So we chose two individuals this year. One was a hatchery manager, and the other one's one of our fisheries management biologists out of Valentine. And they single-handedly went out, and they shocked the dam, and their goal was 60 females. They got 60 females. I think they'd have enough eggs out of those females in order to do all of our fingerling production stockings for the year, which is where they stock, put the eggs after they hatch in our hatchery ponds, raise them up to about 1 to 2 inches, and then we'll stock them in our lakes. And their goal was 60 fish, and they were able to collect 59.
Pretty close.
Yep, they think they met the goal. So we will be stocking walleye in Nebraska this year.
And other fish, what do they estimate for the number of eggs that they got out of that?
Well, Brian Sweet told me he estimates that they spawned about 11 million fish.
Wow.
Out of 59 fish.
That is an amazing statistic and a great job by the guys that did it.
Yep, if you encounter Brian Sweet or Zach Brashears out and about, pat them on the back and buy them a beer, because they definitely deserve it.
Can do. We got to take a commercial break here, but if you would, I want to come back and talk about some of the reservoirs in western Nebraska that we don't hear about much here a lot. So,
you bet.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages.
I have a perfect example of how modern journalism works. Last Thursday, intrepid CBS White House correspondent Mark Noller broke a story on Twitter. Twitter, that's where journalists break news these days, not even on their own networks. Now, this guy Noller tweeted that at a White House meal, President Trump's salt and pepper shakers are bigger than those of his guests at the table. Business Insider reporter James Paisley immediately got in gear to investigate this important lead. And this guy fearlessly combed through photos of presidential table settings. He uncovered the truth. And yes, President Trump has much bigger salt and pepper shakers than the foreign leaders or American politicians who dine with him at the White House. By analyzing 22 news photos, Paisley explored the significance of the president's massive shakers. Paisley postulated President Trump could be using larger salt and pepper shakers as a power move, like his fierce handshakes and the bulky suits that he wears. His big shakers may well be a form of intimidation. Now, in this deep dive, the journalists discovered that Obama, Bush 43, Bill Clinton, they all use the same size shakers as their guests. Imagine the effort it took for this ace reporter to flesh out these details. Think this guy deserves a Pulitzer. His investigative work should be taught in journalism schools everywhere. What do you think? Those shakers may have microphones in them and may be bugs. Ever think of that?
Here's your forecast on News Talk 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. Sunny for today. Highs top out near 88 degrees. Winds turn to the north, 5 to 15 miles per hour. Higher gusts possible. Tonight it becomes mostly cloudy. Chance for showers and storms developing. Lows drop to 50. And then shower and storm chances continue into Saturday. Weather is brought to you by North Platte Airport with daily jet service to Denver and beyond. Book at united.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking this morning with Joe Wright about walleye. And off the air, when we were getting ready for this interview, Joe, we had talked about some of the reservoirs that are in the western part of the state that I don't cover a lot on this show. And I know I've been out there, and I think other people would like to hear about them. So let's talk a little bit about them. Can tell us how they're doing and how's the walleye population? Let's start with Minotaur.
Sure. Well, Minotaur is probably one of the most popular walleye fisheries out in northwest Nebraska. It's a pretty consistent population. If you look at our survey data and our fishing forecast we put out every year, it's usually one of the top five catch rates every year. It's a very productive system. We get walleyes that reach 15 inches, the minimum size limit for them, in between their second and third growing season. So we can get walleyes produced out of there that guys can catch and keep pretty quickly. Some lakes, if you go up into South Dakota, it takes 5 to 7 years in some lakes for those fish to hit 15 inches. We're doing it fairly quickly. This year, our population's down a little bit, but we're still running a big year class, a four-year-old fish. So if you do catch a walleye out there, which still good numbers, is what it usually is, but if you catch a walleye out there, there's a good chance it's between 17 and 20 inches.
Very good. Minotaurs, people coming, particularly if they're coming from trees earlier, if they're coming from any place with trees, Minotaur may be a surprise for them because it's pretty open. But one of the things I like about Minotaur is the lighthouse. It's just such an odd place to see a lighthouse.
You know, I've never actually read up on the history of that lighthouse, but it's definitely a little attraction and something to talk about. And it's open for the public to go up and view.
Yeah, in short, it was a WPA project. And it, like I said, it's a great place now, and they have like a picnic area, sheltered picnic area around it. It's just a cool place to take a look.
Yep, it's got great amenities. The staff down there takes great care. Got shower house, good restrooms, several boat launch areas. It does, water levels do come up and go down. However, we do have ramps that are open to the public that they can use when the lake's open. The lake does close for a period since it's part of the North Platte National Wildlife Refuge. So it closes from October 15th to January 15th every year.
Okay. What about Box Butte?
So Box Butte's kind of a unique lake. A lot of our walleye fisheries are dependent on a pelagic prey base, whether it's alewife or gizzard shad. We don't have either of those in Box Butte Reservoir. So I try to describe Box Butte more as a big farm pond that has walleye opportunity.
Interesting.
During certain years, the walleye population can be really good. And this is kind of one of those years we have a good year class coming on. Those walleye last year were about 13 and a half inches. But with growth rates, those walleye by the end of this summer should be pushing that 15-inch mark and see some good harvestable numbers out of Box Butte.
Very good. Oliver Reservoir.
So Oliver's one that kind of fell off the chart. It's fed by Lodgepole Creek, located down in Kimball County, just west of Kimball.
Right.
And it's a small lake that it's owned by the South Platte Natural Resource District, but yet we still manage the fishery out of it. With Lodgepole Creek drying up last few years, within the last 10 years, that reservoir has really dropped in water level. We've had a couple big storm events during the right time of year that we get heavy inflow and the ground still froze. It's kind of really maintained that reservoir. It's almost filled it a couple times. And then last year, with the groundwater being up and as wet as we are, really, really wet cycle, the lake's actually coming up. And it's maintained a pretty decent walleye population throughout all that.
That's
and
good.
Not
to
a
hear.
Lot of people go out and utilize it.
That's good to hear. The last time I fished Oliver happened to be during one of those drawdown periods, and you could tell that the lake had lost a lot of water. But I'm glad to hear it's coming back.
Now, and last year's survey showed some. Quite a few walleye in there that were just under 15 inches, so it should be a pretty good harvest this year.
Now, you mentioned a lake when we were talking before, getting ready for the show, Lake Winters Creek, and that is a lake I'm not familiar with. I don't believe I've ever fished on it, so tell us a little bit about that one.
So Lake Winters Creek, if you look at our fishing forecast, the last couple of years has been one of the top three populations of walleye that we've sampled out in western Nebraska. This year it had the highest catch rate from all lakes sampled across the state, just over 40 fish per gill net. Lake Winters Creek is located pretty much right across the road from Lake Minadair. It's a North Platte National Wildlife Refuge lake, so it has a few special regulations. You can't use a gas motor. You can have one on your boat. You just can't turn it on. It does have a boat ramp, which is fairly shallow. Bring a pair of waders for getting the boat on and off. But right now, it's got a tremendous population of 15 to 20-inch fish and a few over 20.
I just pulled, when you mentioned it was in the fishing forecast, I pulled that out of my stack of information over here. And, yeah, there's a huge, the bar chart there, it's a huge bar of the green line, which is 15 to 20-inch fish. And, you know, way up there as far as the total numbers. It is probably the best in the state according to the chart here.
Yeah, and it's not a very big reservoir. It's right around 250 to 300 acres. It's an irrigation reservoir. They haven't dried it down too much the last few years, so we've had stable water conditions. We were able to stock a gizzard shad in there for pelagic prey base. I'm trying to manage around a common carp population, and the walleyes have taken off tremendously.
Now, what's the structure of the bottom of the lake like?
It's more like a sandhill lake. It's just a flat basin. There's a little bit of rock points come out here and there, and they rimmed with cattails. But for the most part, it's just an open basin lake. Deepest spots maybe 9 foot.
Wow, That, to me, that does not sound like a walleye lake. That would be one I would probably overlook if I was just looking at looking at the lakes, you know, the bathymetric data on a lake, and I would go, no, I'm not going to go there. So, very interesting. Now, are you a walleye fisherman yourself?
I do. I mean, I like to fish for all species.
Man after my own heart.
There's not really a species that you need to target. In my opinion, if you want to be a real successful fisherman, you need to take advantage of the hot times of year per species. So it's hard to just say you're a walleye fisherman when I like to go try to catch 9 to 10-inch bluegills in sandhill lakes, or I like to go perch fishing. And in the springtime, there's nothing beats the tug of a big pike on a casting rod.
Oh, yeah. Do you know Larry Pape?
I do.
Larry and I are talking about a pike fishing trip out here. I've got a landowner that would like me to come to their pond and try to get some of the pike out, and we're going to take a fly fishing trip out there. And I love fishing pike. They hit hard. They fight hard. I just have to get back with somebody that really knows how to clean them so I can get the secret of getting the Y-bones out.
Great. Hopefully Larry has that one figured out for you.
We'll see. My old buddy that always did that, and you didn't want to get near him when he was cleaning fish. I mean, he was just like some Ginzu whopper chopper when he was going after the fish. But unfortunately, he died, so I've got to find another mentor on that one. In fishing for walleye, what are some of your favorite techniques? Are you a crankbait guy, Lindy rig guy, bait, live bait, whatever?
Well, my personal favorite way to catch walleye is just the old jigging and twister tail.
Okay.
I don't like buying my bait. I don't use minnows very often. I try to find more of an aggressive approach than when the bite's really slow for walleye. Like I said, I'm a multi-species fisherman. I'll go fish somewhere else. I'll go fish for bass or pike or some other species that's more aggressive. However, when the bite's really good, you can catch walleyes very effectively on a jig and twister. But some of the popular ways are dragging bottom bouncers and spinner rigs with live bait, whether it's a minnow, a leech, or a nightcrawler. Won't be too far off to say that I think more walleyes are caught in Nebraska on the bottom bouncer and inline spinner rig than any other method.
I would tend to agree with that. A lot of people rig that way and are successful.
Yep. And early in the year seems like the best bite's just a real slow presentation with just a bait type jig head tipped with some sort of live bait, whether it's half a night crawler, full night crawler, or a minnow early in the year.
Okay. You mentioned bluegill earlier, and that is a fun fish to catch, and I think most of us that are anglers probably started somewhere catching bluegill. What are some of your favorite sandhills like for that? I know they got some great fisheries, great bluegill fisheries in the lakes that are scattered out across the hills.
Great. Probably two of my favorite ones as far as sandhill lakes are Smith Lake, WMA. It's in Sheridan County, north of Lakeside.
Okay.
It's difficult to fish during May and June. In early July, it does have an invasive curly-leaf pondweed taking over the lake. That vegetation grows out to about 10, 11 foot of water, and Smith Lake's only about 10 or 11 feet deep. So when it's on hot, it covers the majority of the lake. However, fishing the open holes and spots around the lake that you can get access to can be very productive when the vegetation's up. Fry Lake's another one, north of Hyannis, or just north of Hyannis, about a mile. It's got a tremendous population of big bluegills in it. Most of them are in that 9-inch range, but there are some bluegills up and over 10 inches in that lake.
Now, both of those lakes sound like my bluegill attack method is a kayak and a long jigging pole.
Right.
That That sounds like fun. I may have to plan another trip up there this week, this spring, or what we have left of spring. I've got some rancher buddies that have some private lakes that they let me come fish bluegill on, and it's a riot. I wish we could come up with like the Georgia Giants, you know, the 5-pound bluegill, because can you imagine that on the end of a line?
Yeah, that's a whopper. My son caught a 11-inch bluegill out of Box Butte Reservoir a couple years ago, and he was only 3 years old.
Did he go water?
The biggest bluegill I've ever had seen in my life. That says a lot coming from a fish biologist.
Did he go water skiing behind it?
No. I'll even tell you the story on it. I was fishing just on the smartweed beds, and he wanted to cast. Had a rod sitting with a beetle spin on it. And I just casted it out and handed the rod, and I kept fishing on the other side. And I looked over and goes, "I got one." "What do you have?" He doubled over pretty good. So I'm thinking it's a little pike. Pike numbers that were in the lake at the time. And he got up next to the boat, and it started doing the old telltale circles.
Right.
I knew it was a bluegill. As soon as it come up, I'm like, holy cow. It was an absolute giant. I wish I would have weighed it, because I'm pretty confident that bluegill is pushing 2 pounds.
Very nice. Did you get some at least pictures of it with him?
Well, he's actually got it on the wall.
That's even better.
You have mounted in my house.
That's even better. Real mount or fiberglass cast?
We end up doing a real mount.
Oh, very good. That'll be a story for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I just wish he was a little bit older to remember it.
My first real try at fishing ultralight. I was fishing over in Missouri and caught a bluegill, and I thought I had a monster on the end until it got up there, and I realized I only had about a 8-inch bluegill, but I fell in love with ultralights after that, just for that reason. Joe, we're out of time. Definitely I'm going to have you on again. You've been a great interview, and I appreciate that. So hopefully... Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you another time.
Sounds good.
Folks, that'll wrap it up for this week, so we'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.